everyone. You're awake and ready. Let us pray together. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Thank you.
my Lord, O my God, O my Savior, O my own. Prepare room and seat in heaven. There I'll join thy angels and sing. From the King James Version of the Bible. And it shall come to pass that if you hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all of your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in its due season, the first rain and the later rain, that thou mayest gather thy corn and thy wine and thy oil. I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath shall be kindled against you, and he shall shut up the heaven, and there be no rain, and that land yield not her fruit, lest ye perish quickly off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Therefore ye shall lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign unto your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And ye teach your children, speaking of them, when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house, and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land, which the Lord sware unto your fathers, to give them as the days of heaven upon earth. And from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 29 and 30. With the soul united to spirit by yoga, with a vision of equality for all things, the yogi beholds his self, spirit united, in all creatures and all creatures in the spirit. He who perceives me everywhere and beholds everything in me never loses sight of me, nor do I lose sight of him. Yogananda's commentary. The divine lover beholds God through every window of thought and space. The cosmic beloved beholds the devotee through every window of his omnipresent love. And locked in visions of love, God and the devotee enjoy unparted union. After uniting his soul to God, the yogi may still maintain the dual relation, the liberated devotee and the God as the object of adoration. The stanza of the Gita definitely points out that the illumined yogi does not lose the individuality of his soul. Instead, he finds his being extended into the being of the spirit. An ordinary person perceives himself as separate from God. The advanced yogi feels his soul as a wave in the ocean of cosmic consciousness. The advanced yogi feels his soul as a wave in the ocean of the cosmic consciousness. But the completely liberated yogi beholds his soul wave as a manifestation of the cosmic ocean. Such a yogi never says, I am God, for he knows God can exist without his soul. But if he wants, he can say, God has become myself. I'd like to speak this morning on perfected love. We all know or have a notion of what love is. In its most basic form, we can say that love is an attraction, that we feel an attraction for something or someone. And as a result of that attraction, our mind stays steady upon that individual. Or that possession. There is Peter Schultz, who deals in the financial markets, has really had to face tests because he advises other people on how to invest their money. And when he gives advice for other people, of course the markets go up and the markets go down. And he's always had a fascination with money. And some people really love money. They like they're attracted to it, they think about it, they have their minds focused upon it at all times. And one of the great challenges for Peter has been to remain in the world but not of the world, to advise other people. You can imagine if you advise other people how to invest their money and then the markets go south and people lose money, and that happens, of course, because you can't predict things 100%. And so it tests your attachment. Can you remain with yourself first, looking out on this world with a spirit of detachment? Can you love God first before the things of this world? We all have our tests. We all have our places of attachment. It can be with things. It can be with people. It can be having situations. It can be having power in this world. Different things come, and we relate to them, and we have a certain love or attraction for them. So when we say we love God, what does that mean exactly? It means that we have that attraction. We want to experience God in a greater fashion. And what is it that is God, that we say is God? It is the universal vision that Papa Ram Dass and Master spoke about. It is the pure love, the pure life that is unsullied, you might say, by the things of this world. Everything in this world has an expiry date. It has a shelf life. And so if we love the things of this world, they will end. And along with it, we will feel a spirit of dejection, despair, anxiety, because we give more weight to the things of this world than we do to the divine. This is important to all of us because it's where we live. It's what you give yourself mostly to. And when it says in the Bible to love God first, and if you keep that commandment, then it's God's good pleasure to give you the prosperity on every level. Spiritually first, that we have the spiritual wealth, that we feel greater love, greater peace, an expanding circle of self that goes out and embraces this entire world and all the beings in it. That universal consciousness becomes part and parcel of us. Normally, we are an individual. And as an individual, we might say that I love God. In most cases, this means I want something from God. I want good health, I want prosperity, I want some prayer answered for myself or somebody else. This is a type of love. This is a type of attraction. When I was in India, I saw many people come to the saints, and they had great reverence for the saints. But most of the people came with the idea of getting something. They had a prayer. They had something that they wanted answered by that saint, thinking that with the saint's blessings, that good health, prosperity, whatever it is that they were looking for would come to them. So this is a kind of love, but it's a let's make a deal love. If I give you this, if I give you my love or my attention, then you'll give me back. You'll give me whatever it is that I want of this world. And that is the lowest basis sort of love. And we all have had it, or we all have it. we think that we're making a deal with God. And if we attune ourselves properly, then everything good. Now, there is a truth to this, as the Bible reading has told us today. But it's not always how it happens, because we have and have come into this world with karma. Karma is the law of cause and effect. And those seeds that we have sown take on a life. Now, seeds don't automatically grow into plants right in a moment. If you take a seed from a great tree, it goes into the earth and it stays there for quite some time before it shoots out some sprouts. Some of those become roots, some of them become the trunk and the stems and the branches. But it takes time for that seed to grow. And the same thing is true with those seeds of cause and effect that we have sown. We have thrown out those seeds, some of them good, some of them bad. And they all take root, and they all take on a life. And so as we grow in our realization of God, we do more and more of those things that we know that are pleasing to God, because when we love God, we want to please God. There was Peggy Dietz, who is a wonderful disciple of Yogananda's, and she said, "It was our greatest joy to give pleasure to the Master," meaning Yogananda. And I know those of us who are around Mother felt the same way. We didn't want to disappoint her. We wanted her to be pleased. And if you thought that you did something that would displease them, it caused you pain, not because you thought you were going to be punished in some way as a small child with a parent, but because you loved them and you wanted them to be pleased. You didn't want to disappoint them. This is a greater notion of love. This kind of love is much closer than the person who comes to make a deal. If I do something that pleases you, then you'll do something for me. Now you want to please God. You want to please the Guru because you feel that kind of love. You feel that kind of attraction. And it's just natural in you. And to think about disappointing God is something that just is abhorrent to you. It causes you pain. Sri Yukteswar described in the astral planet where he was serving in Hiranyaloka that in this sphere, the people were so finely attuned to the divine that if they made the slightest mistake, it caused them a great feeling of pain. Now, you don't have to be on some other planet in order to experience this. When you really feel this love, this perfected love growing inside of you, this feeling of purity, and you make a mistake, and we all do on the upward path. We all make mistakes, but as a result of that mistake, we feel it keenly. It causes us a great deal of pain. And as a result of that, it helps to purify our mind even more. If you think of yourself as a radio receiver, now we know with the radio receiver that you have a dial, and you can dial that radio into any station where you have receptivity. And you can tinker with it and you can get it closer and closer where there's less and less static and a stronger signal until there's no static at all and there's only the strength of the signal. Inside of you, you have a similar kind of radio receiver. And you can tune in to any particular thing, any particular kind of vibration. Now, we're surrounded by vibration. Everything in this creation is vibrating. And so when we look at a dense object, it has a very slow vibration, a great density of vibration. When we look at something that's very refined or sense something that's very refined, the clouds floating up into the blue sky, much finer vibration. But if we perceive the sunlight that is coming from the heavens, that is even of a finer vibration. Now, there are even finer and more refined vibrations than sunlight. There are spiritual vibrations that are constantly surrounding us. We actually live in a sea of spiritual vibration. But many people, and most people's antennas or their radios are not attuned to that spiritual vibration. They're attuned to the things of this world. And some people get attuned to things that are very, very negative and dark. And other people are attuned only to the higher vibrations of this world. They want to do good. They want to manifest good. They don't cheat. They don't steal. They don't rob. They don't murder. They don't, that those kinds of things would be important to them, but they're not necessarily attuned to or knowledgeable of spiritual vibration. Spiritual vibration takes us to a higher level. And so when we love God, we love the higher vibration. And those things of the world begin to lose their hold on us, or we don't tune ourselves to them as strongly as the be-all and end-all as we once did. Ramakrishna was told the story. He's a great saint in India, where he took a coin in one hand and he took a rock in another hand. And he walked down to the river Ganges and he threw them both into the river to test himself to see whether he would discern within himself any greater attachment for the coin than the clod of earth. And he was pleased that he didn't discern any difference inside of him at all. They both felt the same. Now this is quite a test, and it's something that we can give to ourselves. What do we love more? The things of this world or of God? There's a wonderful movie called A Man for All Seasons. And in it is a wonderful soul who has faced a very great test. It's about Sir Mohr and Henry VIII. And Henry VIII was trying to change the laws. And Sir Mohr felt that what he was doing was not right. And the king very much wanted his approval. And he put him into prison. And then he took away all of his books. He didn't allow him to see his family. And ultimately, on some trumped up charges, they tried him and convicted him, and he was beheaded. And A Man for All Seasons meant that he wasn't just there for the springtime or for the good times. He was there for the long run, for the long haul. And he wasn't dissuaded at all. He didn't see himself as being particularly brave. He didn't see himself as being a martyr. Wasn't his choice. But he didn't feel that he could give on what he felt to be morally right in this situation. And so he stayed true to his principles. And he is a deeply spiritual man. And this gave him the strength to be able to go all the way through. So we're tested at different times. We're given tests and we see which do you love more. We're put one hand one thing and another hand another thing. On the one hand, there's God, and the other hand, there's the world. Now, sometimes it's our families and it's our children. Do we love them more? Or the people who surround us? When Mother went to India, she heard Papa Ram Dass's principle to put everything into the ocean, to surrender everything to God. And she realized that she had attachment for her children, who were grown at that time, but they were having their own children, and so her great love for her husband and for her children. And she realized that she had to give these into the ocean, to surrender to them, to let them, give them back to God from which they came in the first place. As Khalil Gibran says in The Prophet, that your children come not from you, but through you. And when you realize that this life has come through you, and that soul has had many lives before this one, and that they have a great soul within themselves that's directly connected to God, and that God loved that soul before you ever loved that soul. And so you realize by surrendering to God, you're not just giving it over to some arbitrary force that has no care, no love for that soul or for that child. God has the greatest love, the greatest care for that one. And so Mother gave her attachment for her children, for her grandchildren, for her husband, for everything in this world. She had already sold her home, everything that they owned, in order to go to India in her search for God. And so she gave everything of herself. Now we can hear those words, and we can think, well, I think I would do that. But it's something else to think that you would do it, and something else to actually do it. To really give yourself. Now this is not an advocation that you have to go out and sell everything, and give it to God, and give it to the poor, and to exist on the streets. We're not asked generally to do that. But we can test ourselves, even as Ramakrishna tested himself. Whom or what do we love more? Do we love the things of this world? Do we love the gold of this world, or do we love the gold of spirit? Do we love the fool's gold, the things of this world, that promises all the happiness in the world? But all we have to do is look upon the pages of the tabloids to see that money and fame don't necessarily give you happiness, not at all. Sometimes they multiply your difficulties. They have taken surveys of people who have won the lottery, and people who are basically happy and contented before they won the lottery were also afterwards. People who are unhappy and discontented before winning the lottery, within a short time after winning the lottery, they were also unhappy and discontented. And many of them ended up claiming bankruptcy within a short amount of time. So we think that the things of this world is going to give us happiness, but it can never give us the truth and the happiness and the inner prosperity that divine attunement can give to us. We must really be honest with ourselves to see where our attachments lie. At a point in my sadhana, God began to take everything away from me. He took away family, he took away home, he took away possessions, everything, and even worldly position. And I was a bit surprised at some of the things, because I had thought that I was rather detached from the things of this world, but when home disappeared, I realized I had a certain identity tied up with my home. When position in this world and what I did for a living disappeared, and God asked me to give it up, there's a certain attachment to it. There's a certain pride. When God took away my mind and my intelligence and the way that I'd had it before, my memory and the way that I had it before, and in the experiences that it gave me, all those things began to disappear, just like phantoms would disappear. And I realized that I had pride in those things. And one by one, they were all taken away from me. And they revealed where my attachments lie. And I had to let go of everything, you see. There is nothing that I could hold on to. There is nothing that I could call my own. I went in through the time that Mother called the great nothingness of God, the void. And in that time, I didn't feel like I had anything or anyone. I had no identity of my own. It felt like a vast sense of emptiness. And it lasted for quite some time, for a couple of years. And there's nothing there. And somebody very close to me said, "It feels like you're gone." And I said, "I'm dead. It just came out of me." And it was true. I was dead in the sense that I didn't have any identity. I didn't have any life of my own. I existed in this great sense of void. Now, when you go through an experience like that and you come out of it, you again resume some sense of identity. If you don't, you can't relate to this world. But in my case, God brought me back into the world of relativity. But he's proved again and again and again until it got pounded into the brain that there is nothing that I could call my own. There's nothing that I could say I to, that this is mine, that this is me. Because whenever I would attach myself or identify with any one of those things, it was taken away. So we can't just fool ourselves, you see. We have to go through those experiences, but what do we get as a result? When you give up your attachment and your identification with anything that's limited, you become unlimited. You become one with the vast sense of spirit, of which you are always a part, but you see your identification with the wave of the ocean kept you from knowing that you are the entirety of the ocean. And waves of the ocean will look at one another and they'll see themselves in opposition, they'll see themselves as separate. But when you go to the root, when you go to the core of that wave, it merges into the ocean, and in the ocean you see that you are part and parcel of everything that is. When Mother went through her spiritual experiences, she came to the point where she felt herself identified with the entirety of the world. And then she looked out on this world and she saw how it behaved towards each other. And she saw the wars and she saw the petty jealousies and everything that goes on. And she thought, my Lord, I don't want that responsibility. And she asked God to take that away from her. And that she might become the individual without that universality. But as you move through these experiences, you come to the point where you're both the universal and the individual. You're both the wave of the ocean and you are the ocean itself. Yogananda continues with his commentary, the soul of the emancipated yogi can remain merged, if he wishes, in the absolute as the absolute, or the liberated yogi, owing to retention of his God-created individuality, which may never be lost. Now, we see oftentimes our individuality and our desire nature and our attachments are what is at the root of the problem. So some people think that when they become God-realized, they lose all sense of their self as an individual. But it is God who has manifested himself as the individual, as all individuals. And from the divine viewpoint, the waves and the ocean are not in opposition to each other. When you become identified with the ocean itself, you can easily identify as any wave. And as God has given you a particular individuality, then it is easy to identify with that individuality. But you do not lose your identity with the entirety of the ocean. Now, to try to say this a little more clearly, if you can imagine within yourself that there is a point of connection with a universal consciousness, and there you feel yourself expanded. You may have moments of this realization while in deep meditation or in some spiritual experience that you have. And you feel yourself expanded and expanded in that purity of spirit. And when you're in that experience, you may have difficulty imagining yourself as an individual. You see them as somewhat being non-compatible. But as the purity of love grows inside of you, that purity is able to manifest itself in you as individuality. And then there is no loss of identity with the universal consciousness. You feel it even as you experience yourself in your individuality. There is a purity that runs through and through. Now there is no separation. There is no opposition. There is only a unity of consciousness of the universal and the individual. Now you may manifest your individuality with the purity of that divine spirit. Now this grows slowly. At first, you dive deep into meditation and you experience yourself in that universal consciousness. And then it is through the complete purification of your individuality. Now this is a rare state in this world. There are many saints, but few of them attain that absolute union. Once Yogananda was asked about who in his, from his life and from the autobiography of a yogi had attained that. And he said only two that he had met. He didn't mention Babaji, but of course Babaji would be one, as well as other great masters, Jesus and others, that he had visions of. But Sri Yukteswar and Ram Kabal Mazumdar both had it. There were two besides his guru, and the other was the saint with two bodies. And so it is rare, and he met many, many great saints. But it is rare to meet one who has had that complete and total union. But when you do, you have the truth of your own being. You have the truth of God within you. And you have it in such great purity, such great perfection of love, that there is no longer any division. It runs through you, through every cell, through every part of your being. And even in so-called mistakes made by the human being in you, there is nothing but the pure consciousness of God. Therefore, you can say that whatever that individual does comes from that purity. This is a great and wonderful state. This is what Jesus came to teach. Not just that he had that, and that he came to teach that about himself, but that all might attain that blessed union, that divine. That is what yoga means, is union. Union with the divine. Complete and total union. And so we begin right where we're at. We put one foot in front of another on the path. We feel that love. We cultivate that love. You can pray for that love to God. Let me feel more attraction for you than the things of this world. We still have to live in the world, and that's what makes it tricky. But we are householder yogis, and therefore we dedicate ourselves to a totally balanced life. We live in this world, but not of it. We participate in family, in business, in money, in enterprises, in the creativity as God expresses it through each and every one of us. But first and foremost, we love God first. We put God first. Now, this does not mean you need to go around putting your foot in people's doorstops and preaching the gospel. It means you go inside, you examine yourself, you really take a look at yourself. You examine what are your motivations, where are your attachments. And when you discover an attachment, you work to let go of that attachment and put your mind on God first. What if all your money were taken from you? What if all your things were taken from you? What if every relationship was taken from you? And I can tell you from my own experience, you will live, you will exist. You will still have that union with the divine, and that is what is first and foremost. And from that, everything else flows. Everything else comes. And if you need it, it will be there for you when you put God first. The reason people don't get God first is because they don't put God first. So they don't get it first. They're mixed. And as a result of that, they get mixed results. Now, this will never do for somebody who is looking for that total and absolute union. Continue with Master's commentary. The stanza stresses the state of duality that may exist between the devotee and God. The liberated devotee can watch God through every open niche of space, as the spirit can look at him through every pore of the sky. Such a liberated yogi never loses sight of God, nor does God ever lose sight of him. The true lover is God. We are all his beloveds, mistakenly seeking love in impermanent human beings. The thirst for affection can never be quenched by the imperfect love of mortals. When the devotee, by the practice of loving mortals, truly learns to love all beings, and by meditation learns to love God supremely, then and then only is his longing for love satisfied. So within our relationships, with all people. We seek to love God within every individual. When we make a commitment in marriage, we really make that commitment to love God within the individual. We learn to look past the little human failings. We all have them. But we look to see God within that individual. Marriage is one of the great places for us to find that perfection because it tests us perhaps as few other relationships do. Our children come as close second. But we have an attachment to how things are supposed to be, how our spouse is supposed to be, how things are supposed to look. And when they don't measure up, we feel disappointed and we begin to withdraw ourselves. We begin to limit the amount of love that is within the heart. But when you look out through the eyes of God and you love with the heart of God, the feeling of God, and you love the God within the other individual, not their humanity necessarily. Sometimes within the humanity there's things that are difficult to love or impossible perhaps. But when we love God within that, we look past the human frailties and we look to the divine soul that that individual most certainly is, whether they realize it or not. We let go of our disappointments. We let go of our hurts. We let go of the things that have disappointed us down through time. And we learn to love God within that one. It's a deeper love. It's more profound. And what we realize is that when we limit our love for another individual, we limit our love. We limit our experience of love. We limit the depth of love that we feel within our own heart, of God loving through us. And so you allow God to love through you. And that love pours forward. It comes from your heart center. And it goes out to this world. And it doesn't even have to be towards any particular person or thing. I feel that love, and I feel it 24/7. It's something, it's a spirit, it's a love that flows through the heart. And it's not of my own making. If it were of my own making, as an individual, as a human being, then it would have limits. And it would love sometimes and not other times. But it flows, and I am a witness to what it does. It flows through me, and goes out to this world as a whole. I feel a spiritual radiance, an ambience that goes out from this being. And it goes out to all those who are following this path. It goes out to the world as an entirety. And again, I am a witness to what this does. I am not the author of it. I don't try to make it happen. It's a natural part. It's as much a part or more of a part of me than breathing or thinking or doing. It's more fundamental to my nature. And it's not just for me, it's in every one of us. We all have that perfect love. But most of us have our hearts blocked off. And so we learn to let go of the things that have disappointed us as human beings. This world is filled with disappointment. And it's designed to be so. If we found perfect fulfillment in this world, we would never seek the Creator of this world. But when we find God, then we find ourselves loving all creation, all beings, all things. That doesn't mean you lose your discrimination. You see when somebody is misbehaving. You know it. You feel it keenly. But you love them because you know by seeing God in them and loving God in them is the greatest capacity for rising that one up and lifting them into their own divine nature. When you see God in another one, and particularly those who don't see it in themselves, then you help to speed that one's evolution. Because by your seeing it and feeling it, you send that to them, and you help to awaken that seed a divine nature that's deeply hidden within them. Now, some people, it's deeply hidden. It's under a lot of layers. But it's there. And perhaps it's waiting for some spring day to come along and the warm sun to touch it, to awaken it. And you can help to speed that awakening when you see the divine nature within everyone whom you meet. And when you do that, you unleash the divine nature within yourself. You bring it to greater fullness. You expand. You grow. You are uplifted. You let yourself out of a self-made prison. In the Old Testament scriptures, we read about where God will curse those who go against the law. And this is an old-fashioned way, you might say, of describing the law of karma. It is not God punishing individuals for not loving God. That would be a petty God, wouldn't it? But rather, this world is made up of principles, is made up of laws. And if you learn to operate the laws, then you benefit. And if you don't, and you go against them, then you are hurt. And you hurt those who are around you. And so it's just merely describing this law. And if you learn to love God with all of your strength and with all of your soul, you see, then your good comes to you because you're wide open to it. Because your heart is wide open. Your soul is wide open. All the doors along the spine and the brain are wide open. And it allows the goodness to come to you. Why? Because the doors are no longer closed. That's why. And who closed them? You closed them. Now, it may have been some distant day in the past that you don't remember now. But if you go far back in time and law of cause and effect, you will see that it was your own choices, perhaps unremembered now, that closed those doors. But close them you did. And you are the one who can open them, your willingness. God will not go against your will. So if you insist on keeping those doors closed, you may. But you can, with intelligent action, open those doors. And when you open them, you experience that perfected love flowing in you, through you, and all around you. You experience that purity of spirit. And it will change you in the most fundamental ways. And yet, there's a sense of self that is always the same. That part of you that you have always said, this is me. That has always existed inside of you and always will. But you will discover that purity. You'll discover that love. And now, you're no longer feeling an attraction for something. You have become the very thing that you have loved. And this is the most powerful transformation anyone can make in their life. My love and my prayers go with you. And I ask God to bless each and every one of you, awakening a greater love, greater purity within your own being. It already is there, it already exists. But that it awakens inside of you so greatly that you find yourself merged into that divine being of which you are a part and which is a part of you. That you go into the vast ocean of God. And that if you come again as a wave, you come with complete knowledge and awareness of who and what you have always been. Be it now, be it always. Now, if you will pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. I feel that love moving in my heart.
I feel that love moving in my heart.
And expanding out into all space. With fullness of light.
Fullness of bliss.
Fullness of oneness with the Divine Spirit.
Fullness of oneness with the Divine
Spirit. I and thou are ever one. Are you living the life perfectly? Great.
I have a question. Well, that feeling of the heart opening, it feels like a flood and like over like too much emotion.
So that's a great point, because that's as that expands, we're not used to it. And so if you think about opening in the river, and if it floods, then it begins to flow over the banks, and it feels like it's too much, and it can do damage that way, and we become afraid that, oh, what will happen to me here? Or in your mind's eye, if you think about at those moments when that feeling of love was coming, and expanding the banks, because it's pliable, unlike a river bank that may not be pliable, you can expand the heart. You can feel it going out just as big as you need it to be. There's no constriction. The constriction is within our own mind and our own habit pattern. So as you imagine being able to do that when you have a time of expansive love, and you open your heart wider and wider, just as wide as it needs to be to comfortably accommodate that feeling of love, what do you notice as you perform a thought experiment? And think of doing that.
Right away, it feels grounded, is maybe the word that comes to mind, but my heart sort of slows down a little bit.
And that notion that it's too much, but what do you notice about that notion as you expand, open your heart?
It's a little surprising. There's enough space.
And, but it does feel like there's enough space now. It doesn't feel overwhelming. It feels calmer.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Yeah. So you can see how our mind artificially puts these limits, these banks to the river, and says, oh, I can only do so much. And so whether it's the love coming through the heart or the energy and power coming up to the spine, just remember as a basic principle that in the spiritual experience, just expand your mind out, and in consciousness, we can expand out as big as this universe or bigger. And it is enough. It's enough space for all of that spirit to exist. Good. Good point. Because we've all experienced that, and we feel stretched by it. And we can actually, and there are people who feel overwhelmed by an experience, and they'll close the door and they say, oh, I'm not sure I can open that door. You know, I have work to do in this world, I have responsibilities, or I don't want to be overwhelmed, or I don't want to look foolish in front of other people. All these fears come up. And they're all unfounded, but they're fairly universal, and they do. And so when we expand ourselves, then we accommodate for that greater spirit. And easily come before. And there can be times when we're stretched because the nervous system, both the physical nervous system and the subtle nervous system of the astral body, are not attuned yet to all that power. And so we feel really stretched by everything that's coming through us. But just like when we exercise and we have the muscles, they stress and they strain, but as a result, the blood vessels open up and it builds more muscle. And so in the moment, we feel exhausted, tired out, we may feel sore. But as a result of doing that consistently, the muscles grow and we get into shape. Spiritually, it's a very similar kind of thing. The greater power comes through the nervous system, stretches it, but as a result of stretching it, it grows stronger. And now, what we can accommodate is very easy, but before what really stretched us. But spirit is always growing and expanding, so the next time it may stretch us a little bit more. You know, it's like a trainer who keeps on pushing you. Okay, you did 10 last time, do 15 this time, do 20 this next time. So we always feel like we're being stretched until we get completely transformed. And this is a complete makeover. It's going on in the soul and in the body, and the entire system is getting revamped. So Jesus said it this way, you don't pour new wine into an old wineskin. Because the principle was the old wineskin, the seams would break. And then you'd lose all the wine. So you get a new wineskin, you get a new body in Christ. It's the terminology that was used. You get a renewed body that's been completely transformed into this higher vibration, this higher consciousness that can easily accommodate it. Otherwise it would break the old body, the old consciousness. So it's quite a thing, but it's completely worth it. Does that make sense? Any other questions? Observations? Meditate for a minute, a few minutes here. And in particular, I want you to focus in on your heart center. That's right in the center of your chest. It's not where your physical heart is down off on the left. Right in, if you were to pull your shoulder blades back until they touched, that would be the point in the spine. And as you breathe, just want you to sense that heart center, whatever degree it's there for you. You can't, don't try to force anything, just more be aware of forces that are operating there. But just sense an opening in your heart there. And some sense of movement, particularly from behind you and through you and out from you. It is like a stream, or like a river, or like an ocean in movement. And as you breathe, just open a little wider the banks of the river, allowing a greater flow, whatever that means to you. And you may get to a point where it just feels a bit too much, and that's all right, just let it close up a little bit. Just stretch it out a little bit. And sense the flow of that spiritual vibrancy, that current. It may come as a sense of love. It may come as a sense of peace. It may come as a sense of purity. But it definitely has that higher vibration to it. It may not be as strong as you would like it to be. That's all right. Take away all judgment. Just get a sense of movement. And as you feel that movement, just feel it going out from you, out in front of you, and flowing out to all creation. All those whom you know, all those whom you love, all those in this room. But it can just go out and out and out. Until you feel this world is swimming in a sea of that vibration that you're feeling in your heart. And you are part of that ocean. And you are also your own individuality of that ocean, of that vibrant sea. This is love for God. Teach yourself to become more attracted to this pure vibration than any other vibration, than any other person or place, and you will free yourself from the things of the world and become liberated in spiritual vibrancy. It's not any more complicated than that. You may also feel that vibrancy in the ajna, the point between the eyebrows, and in the top of the head, the Sahasrara, the crown chakra. This is your inner temple. And you can go within and worship there at any time, in any place, in any circumstance.